Good afternoon, everyone. So I think you all heard about urban soil contamination and sources and so forth. So I'm not going to go over any of those. So the when we think about not just lead, urban soil contaminants in general, considered as like risk to urban agriculture. So out of these urban soil contaminants, the most common contaminants undoubtedly is lead. And then the lead concentration in urban soils, although in the U.S. Surface soils, average lead concentration is about 15 to 20 ppm, the urban background or the urban soil average could be as high as 150 milligrams per kilogram or ppm. And then it can go up to about 3,000 in some areas, although it's not that common. So when we look at the exposure pathways of soil lead to human, then we can divide first into two categories. One is direct exposure pathway, which is directly from soil to human, and then the indirect exposure pathway. So something like that I am going to focus on my talk, that is soil to plant to human kind of indirect pathway, not directly from soil to human. So the direct pathways, ingestion, inhalation, dermal absorption, and out of those, and out of even direct and indirect, when we are comparing, we know that science tells us again and again that ingestion is the pathway that we do need to worry about when it comes to soil lead. Because this is a concern and urban agriculture, a hindering concern, urban agriculture, the soil lead, so it's good to look at what's the indirect pathway. It's good to have some science or the data for what this the plant uptake. So that's what I'm going to focus on. And then if you're looking at this indirect pathway of soil lead getting from soil to plant to soil to plant and then eventually to human, so the uptake of soil lead by food crops going to be dependent on plant availability of lead. So it's not total lead, so it's going to be dependent on plant availability. So when we say plant availability, what are the factors that's going to influence? So the speciation of soil lead, of course, that's going to influence availability, and soil properties such as pH, the organic matter content, and then the other the soil minerals and other stuff in soil, and then redox, and then at the same time, not just those things, since we are looking at plant uptake, so the plant species will also show differences. So certain plant species will take up more compared to other plant species. And there could be even, when you take one plant species, you may see even varietal differences or cultivar differences. So how to measure availability of lead to plant? Again, gold standard to measure is like grow plants and see what's going to be end up in plants. So that would be the gold standard. And then there are other methods that we can use, soil-based extraction methods, soil test methods, that to measure what's going to be, predict what's going to be plant available. So there are like dilute solution extractions, diffusive gradient in thin film. So likewise, there are methods that are going to give some idea about what's going to be available for plant. So a little bit about when it comes to lead, something we do need to look at, not just lead, about trace elements in general. The concept of what we call as traditionally soil-plant barrier. So the processes in soils or plants which prevent, this means that the processes in soils or plants which prevent excessive food chain transfer of elements. So the two major processes are insolubility or adsorption of in soil or plant roots. So when you look at certain elements, they are either absorbed very strongly through inner sphere mechanisms to soil particles so that they are not going to be available for plant uptake. At the same time, you will see that some of these move from soil to root, but it's going to be absorbed in roots or precipitated in roots, so they are not moving from roots to above ground portion. So that's considered, as a barrier, so that we are going to be safe because of those processes. Then the other kind of a different type of thing is, it is happening with some elements, phytotoxicity. Because if you do have these elements in highly bioavailable form, and plants going to show toxicity before the level of these elements in plant reach to a level that can be harmful for us. So that's another way of protection. So the examples, so the lead is there, and then the second one, you can look at zinc, copper, nickel. So you hear about phytotoxicity, you can go on to all the way to boron and fluorine. So there are exceptions, however, when we are looking at trace elements. Those exceptions are cadmium and selenium can transfer if you do have in soils in bioavailable form. They could transfer easily from soils to plants and then to human. And then the molybdenum, selenium, cobalt, that's possible risk to livestock. Especially grazing on the grasses growing in contaminated soils. So those are the exceptions. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to use two lead uptake studies and focusing on two very different sites and look at plant uptake of lead, just to give you some idea about how that theoretical, that plant, soil-plant barrier is working to prevent lead uptake. So this first site is located in Kansas City, Missouri, and had low to moderate lead contamination. So as you can see that, the smaller area, but the lead distribution was extremely heterogeneous, and then it ranged from about 50 to 350. So initially this map was generated based on XRF data, handheld XRF data, and then we took samples and took it to lab and then did APA 3051 method to verify the correlation between the XRF and the 3051 method was great. And then this site, because the neighbors were worried about chlorine and some other contaminants, we did testing of other things too. So those are there. Only thing, we did not found detectable chlorine, but we found some detectable DDT and DDE, daughter product of DDT, but those were not high enough to be concerned about plant uptake. So this is just to show the selected soil properties from those samples we took to lab. And the two main thing, when you do have elevated soil lead, two things that you need to focus on is soil pH. You want to maintain soil pH closer to neutral. And then the second one is looking at what's the available phosphorus level. So as you can see from there, soil pH, when it is closer to neutral, so we did not think that it's something we do need to do anything to correct it. And then the melic 3 extractable P values were high, as those considered as high for state of Kansas standards. I think it's anywhere that's the case. So you are trying to grow something, you find that nitrogen is limited. That's kind of like the limiting factor. So we found that in some of those soil samples. So the organic matter content wise, it wasn't bad. But this one was actually the neighbors want to have a community garden over there. But if you look at the soil texture, that is 21% clay, so it's heavy textured soil, so it's kind of difficult to work in. So based on these soil results, we decided to install test plots and test the locally available compost addition to no amendment situation, but providing nutrients like basic basal dose of nutrients. So we also grew intentionally three very contrasting type of crops: leafy vegetable, the Swiss chard representing leafy vegetable, carrots for root crops, and tomato for as a fruiting crops, just to look at how these very different crops are going to behave, what kind of uptake. So the one thing that the urban garden is going to get immediately by adding something like that, something we don't need to tell them, that's something they add to their soil. So the compost addition, since they are adding compost in large quantities, usually by 1/3 to 1/4 by volume to top 4 or 6 centimeters, and mixing it well, so the one immediate benefit that they get is the dilution. So that dilution, as you can see, that the four blocks we had, the dilution effect was pretty significant. So that's an immediate benefit that they get from addition of compost, although compost addition is not going to change lead chemistry immediately. So here this shows the lead concentration in Swiss chard. So the y-axis shows lead concentration in milligrams per kilogram dry weight basis, and the x-axis is the compost or the no compost. So when we compare the above, the Codex, the FAO, WHO maximum contaminant level for leafy vegetables is about, dry weight basis is about 5 milligrams per kilogram dry weight basis. So the key is, regardless whether we added anything or not, the concentration we observed in Swiss chard was far below that maximum level. So that is first thing. And then when we look at compost addition, so compost the compost versus no compost, we saw about 59% reduction of lead in Swiss chard. We also, when we bring these things to lab, we divided those into two, and we went through two different types of cleaning. One cleaning just to mimic what gardeners do, what we do when we grow something like a kitchen washing. So we wash with tap water to remove all visible soil particles. So we did that type of washing, as well as we did laboratory cleaning, where we use something similar to detergent to remove adhered soil particles carefully. So basically to remove the surface soil contamination of produced samples. So you can see that the difference between those two, about 67% of reduction on average just by cleaning. So when you look at this one, it should come to your mind one thing we can simply do if we are concerned about the produce we grow in urban soils. Here this shows the tomato. So you can see that the values are far below the Codex limit. For tomato it is about 1.6. Again, we didn't see compost addition significant effect, but we did see the lab cleaning had significant influence on what end up in tomato. So the carrot was the only one that we saw the lead concentration in tissues were greater. So you need to look at it. It's a root crop. What we eat is root. So I talk about accumulation in root. And we do know that the lead accumulation is in extended hypocotyl type of root crop like carrot. It's in the xylem. So that means like peeling would not change anything. So the We did speciation as well using X-ray absorption spectroscopy. I'm not going to go into detail, but in general, what we observed was the lead in these soils were mainly organic bound or iron bound. And then we did not see after addition of immediately after addition of compost, we did not see changes. But when we look at after, this is from a site from Indianapolis, after 642 days, we can clearly see some shift in the lead speciation. So it takes long time adding and then the changing the organic carbon and then changing lead chemistry that way. So the second example site is Philadelphia, and this site had highly contaminated. So the lead concentrations were ranging from 1500, above 1500 to close to 2500. So this is not something that we usually encourage anyone to grow directly in soil. However, for research purposes, we did some screening type of thing without soil amendment just to get an idea. So with all these sites, we measure the bioaccessible lead as well using physiologically based extraction method. So those are over there too. So just to walk you through this, so the total lead concentrations range from about close to 1600 to about 2100. But when you are looking at the accumulated, what accumulated in mustard or what accumulated in lettuce, you can see that the concentrations are below that 5 ppm level. So the carrots and beet again are the ones that accumulated lead. So again and again showing that the root crops are the ones that's going to accumulate lead. So, and in 2012, we actually established plots and we did it with amendments. So you can see that the beet leaves versus beet roots versus carrot. Again, showing that beet leaves you don't have to worry about. And you can see accumulation in beet roots and carrots. So here in this site too, we did see the lead was mostly associated with iron and the organic matter. And then as a summary, so the pathway from contaminated soil, plant to human is insignificant. The potential exposure pathway of concern is direct exposure. So that's where we need to do things like Kirk mentioned, like Nick talked about. So the compost addition, so the immediate benefit is dilution, and long term there may be chemical changes depending on compost type we use. And then the wash fruits and vegetables before eating, and gardening away from the deep lines of roof in older homes, things like that. And then the basic things you can do if you are gardening, just make sure that you are not tracking soil home, clean your shoes and things like that. So thanks.